Hi, welcome to the Biographics Podcast. This week, we are looking at... I don't know if he still is. He might still be. No, he's probably not anymore, is he? He's not the world's youngest billionaire, but he once was. And he did all of that by creating a website that essentially defined a generation. Certainly my generation, this website was a huge part of my life growing up ever since I was at university, I think was when it first kicked off back in... maybe 2006 was when I first got it. Today, it's valued at $500 billion. That's just an absurd amount of money. And it's also, especially more recently, had its fair share of controversy in the last few years. Well, we're going to get into all of the details, but let's just say it's not been pretty. If you hadn't guessed already, yes, and you probably did know what we're talking about because you saw the title of this episode, but it is not Facebook itself, but rather the creator of Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg, the man who, yeah, really created something when he was really young that became huge and, like I said, defined a generation. Now, you might think you know about Mark Zuckerberg. I thought I knew quite a bit about Mark Zuckerberg because I'd seen the movie The Social Network. The Social Network was a Social Network, interesting aside, was a movie that made me think Justin Timberlake was a good actor. And then I saw In Time and I was like, oh no, he was just good in that one movie. I've not been impressed by Justin Timberlake since, but I mean, he's a very funny guy. His singing in The Lonely Island when he joins that band is amazing. He was amazing in The Social Network, but I'm yet to be impressed by something else acting wise he's done. If you got a recommendation for me, I'd like to hear it. Anyway, that movie, The Social Network, it kind of didn't really do justice to the character of Mark Zuckerberg. It was very black and white, sort of painting Zuckerberg as a kind of like a Lex Luthor, just kind of this black and white or this black bad guy, just kind of intent on building something huge and then just crushing everyone who got in his way. And don't get me wrong, Mark Zuckerberg absolutely does a fair amount of crushing in his time and all of that. But life, it's not a comic strip. There's more to Mark Zuckerberg than that movie portrays, and maybe than the media portrays. His real life story is a lot more interesting than that. It's basically the story of a kid from a small town. And don't get me wrong, super privileged kid, like came from a good family, went to, you know, had lots of opportunities in life. He wanted to create this idealistic digital empire. And basically, even though, like, after doing this podcast, like doing the reading for this and stuff, I was like, he's still idealistic. He still wants to create something good. He's just ended up with something that's not really that. Anyway. As we always do, let's take things back to the beginning. Let's go back to the birth of Mark Zuckerberg. And this was in a small town called Dobbs Ferry in New York State. And Zuckerberg, he was basically, you know, you see these people, it's like, yeah, you're going to go far. You're going to do things. You're going to make something of yourself. Zuckerberg, he was absolutely one of these people. His father, he was a dentist. His mother was a psychiatrist. And they gave birth to Mark, who was, they were smart. Mark was gifted. He got into programming when he was super young. He was creating both games and useful apps. And all of this stuff, his parents were super encouraging of them. They were like, yeah, go for it, Mark. You know, learn, read. And they had four children. So Mark had three siblings. And his parents were like this to the other three. But Mark was special. He got really into it. Indeed, I didn't know this. He speaks fluently. He taught himself to speak fluently Hebrew, French, Latin, and ancient Greek. Like two of those languages, Latin and ancient Greek, I guess just for fun. I mean, I guess it's all just for fun. He speaks English. He doesn't really have some huge pressure to learn a foreign language. But, you know, why not speak four languages, two of them that are basically dead and useless? At the same time, he also read a ton of classic literature. And this kind of all paid off for him. He was smart. He did well at school. He eventually was accepted into the elite. And this really is elite. I mean, I'd heard of this place from like movies and stuff, maybe, or like at some point. It's called the Phillips Exeter Academy. I did some reading about this place. It's got its own Wikipedia page dedicated to notable alumni, and there's some seriously impressive people on here, like unbelievably so. Like, just I won't, you know, name and do that here, but just go have a look at that page. It's Phillips Exeter Academy. If there's somewhere you want to send your kids, apparently it's there because everyone's super successful. While he was at Phillips, he and a friend wrote a media player. And this was not just some school project. Maybe it was a school project, I don't know, but it was real good. And they ended up starting a bidding war between Microsoft and AOL for this product that these two kids had developed. Remarkable start for Zuckerberg. Everything that he's done, so far, and he's still at school. Also, another fun insight into his mindset at this point, as well as making software and selling it to companies and learning 5 languages and all of this stuff. You know, we said he wasn't a very Lex Luthor star character. However, there was a form that he filled out at this time and it asked him to list his hobbies, and he just wrote defeating nemesis. And I thought that was kind of a very Lex Luthor star move. But yeah, in short, Mark Zuckerberg's a bit of a badass at this point. Seriously impressive. Seriously impressive dude today. Seriously impressive kid. Anyway, he kind of had this incredible combination of things, and I think these are kind of your keys to success, and he had them all. He had intelligence, very smart. He had drive. You know, you can be as intelligent as you want without drive, but he had that as well, and tons of it. And he also had the right start in life. He came from a privileged background. His parents were a dentist and a psychiatrist. They were smart. He had money, good family. Yeah, so he had a good leg up. And then he had the intelligence and drive to really make that stuff happen. And I read a lot of biographies, and this is a pretty common thread. Drive, intelligence, good start. I mean, you can do it, you know, you can lack one of those things and maybe you'll be all right. But, you know, that's the golden trio or whatever. Anyway, life continued to go well for Mark. He got accepted into Harvard. Not a surprising thing. Lots of people from that Phillips Exeter Academy absolutely go to Harvard and other such schools that are just as impressive. The thing is, to this point, Mark, you know, had spent much of his life growing up in that Dobbs Ferry place. It was kind of a small town. And, you know, at Exeter, he was surrounded by smart people. At Harvard, he was basically, you know, it's Harvard. He was surrounded by a lot of geniuses. They were like him. He was kind of not really special anymore, and he felt it. He kind of felt a bit isolated. And, you know, rather than going to a lot of social functions and making friends and stuff like that, basically he spent more time than ever before in his room programming things and making things, doing things that people wanted to use. One of the first of these was something called Course Match, one word, and essentially what students could do is they could put in their information and then they could also see all the information that other students had put in about what classes they were going to. So basically, if you wanted to go to classes with your friends, you could look it up on Course Match. You could put in your own information. Everyone could get together and match up and be like, hey, I want to take this class, and Bob's taking that class as well, so I'm going to sign up for that one. You know, very good at identifying what people need, and then, you know, very skilled and the ability to make it super fast, get it out and get people using it. This is a theme we will see repeat itself over and over again in this podcast, and it's not just with Course Match and Facebook, over and over again. Okay, you know what's also super interesting about this Course Match thing? I was doing a bit of reading, background reading on this, learning about it and stuff. When I did a Google search for Course Match, the first thing that comes up is a Quora page, and it says, is there software like Course Match today? And I'm like, wow, this was something he made, 15 years ago, and people still want this today, and no one's making it, or it's just not there, or what? But Zuckerberg, ahead of the time. Okay, so fun aside, and I promise this will be the last time we mention this Phillips Exeter Academy, that website, Quora, with that Course Match thing on, do you want to know who's the co-founder of that thing? Yes, he went to Phillips Exeter Academy. And you know what else is a wild coincidence that I did not realize? He's the guy who founded Quora, which is a huge website if you hadn't heard of it. Absolutely huge. Not Facebook, but vast. You know, definitely something I use. He was the guy... The founder of it was the guy who wrote the software, the media program that was sold, that started the bidding war between Microsoft and AOL. So there you go. Now, Mark was a little bit disappointed with Course Match. It worked. It did well. But it didn't really make him stand out. It wasn't genius. It didn't live up to his own expectations of something that would be amazing. But what did, that would be his next thing, and that was FaceMash. Now, this is a scene that's really, really, really nicely portrayed in that movie, The Social Network, which, by the way, I'm a huge Aaron Sorkin fan, and this movie is just at his best, at his absolute best. If you haven't seen it, you should go see it. It's pretty excellent. So, I'm going to recap it here, just because you haven't seen the movie, and this is a factual biography rather than a fictionalized story of stuff. Anyway, Mark had been jilted by a girl, and many a young man... He's getting drunk, he's sitting at his computer in his dorm, and he's going through what his dorms at Harvard, they have these things called Facebooks, which is not what we know today, but rather it's a photo directory of students present in each dorm. And He was kind of like, these people have really bad photos. And I don't know, like my student ID when I was at university, not exactly the most flattering thing. It's something they take in front of a white sheet on like the first day of university, and then they print it and you're like, oh, I look like a criminal. Anyway, Mark was looking at all these people at Harvard and he was like, these are really bad photos. And being in a rather negative state of mind, he was like, I could create some software, put it on the internet, and we could rate the attractiveness of these people compared to farm animals. And, you know, he drank a bit more, he thought a bit more, the idea started to evolve, and basically it evolved into, is this thing called Hot or Not back in the day? Is anyone else familiar with that? I don't know what happened to that, but basically he thought, let's not compare them to farm animals, let's let people compare them to each other. And also this, you know, seems like a more popular idea as well. Anyway, his next step was, rather than, you know, actually getting people to submit photos and stuff, this was, I guess, before people really cared about internet privacy as they do today. He just hacked into all of the various Harvard dorms database, so not just Kirkland, where he was, but also all of the other dorms, and he basically stole all the photos, stole all the metadata for them, and stuck them on a website, and said, hey, rank these people against each other. And in a kind of self-incriminating way, although they definitely know it was him anyway, he was blogging this whole thing while he was making it and getting drunk, and yeah, so he launched it, and it absolutely exploded. And did I mention this? It was called Face Smash. It absolutely blew up on the Harvard social scene, and people just started using it immediately. Zuckerberg stated of this later, people are way more voyeuristic than what I would have thought, which, yeah, I don't know. I see why this would be popular. And that thought, it would definitely lead places, as we'll see later. Anyway, Face Smash, it didn't last. It's a great idea, but as you can imagine, Harvard, they weren't very pleased with it. They very quickly shut it down, and they were like, Mark, you're going to need to come to some disciplinary hearings about this one, because you hacked into all of it, you made this thing, we don't like it. And this was pretty serious stuff. This wasn't just a talking to at the principal's office, or whatever the university equivalent of that is. It was basically like, we're going to suspend or expel you. Fortunately, it didn't happen, and Mark, he didn't really care at this point. Face Smash, unlike Course Match, it gave him what he wanted. He wanted fame, he wanted notoriety, he wanted to be the, you know, when he was in his small town, he was the smart guy, and people knew him, and he was a big deal, and a big fish in a small pond, and now he was a small fish in a big pond, and Face Smash, it kind of made him a bigger fish. People knew who he was. He was the guy who made Face Smash. Anyway, this brought another person, another character in today's story onto the scene, and this would be Priscilla Chan, a name you're going to come across again in this episode because, well, I can spoil it. She ultimately becomes his wife to this very day. This was all the way back in 2003, and it was the days kind of social stuff was just sort of happening on the internet, the early days of Web 2.0, or I remember when Web 2.0 was a new thing. Doesn't seem like it was, what, 15 years ago, but there we go. God, 15 years ago, 2003. Anyway, and Harvard was kind of a hotbed of activity for this sort of stuff. These were the smart people who were going to take advantage of Web 2.0 and do something with it. Something like Facebook. Or, well, not quite Facebook, because this is another character enters the scene. Someone, in particular, was going to make something happen, and this was Divya Narendra. He was a brilliant student in his junior year at Harvard, and his idea was to take the Harvard Facebooks and the images from each student, kind of like Mark had done, but with less hacking, and then make them into a site that would have interaction. It would have sort of a dating section, a social section. It would have the kind of real aspects of social interaction on a website. Doesn't sound so impressive today when this is something that we have every day all the time, but back then this was a new idea, and he called this Harvard Connection. Not exactly the catchiest name there, Divya, but anyway, this is a lot of characters introduced. This is where the twins, the identical twins, Tyler and Cameron Winklevoss, enter the picture, and they are basically as money men, and they needed a tech person, and who comes to mind? Well, it was the man who had made Face Smash, Mark Zuckerberg. He's, like we said, he's kind of famous on campus now. And Zuckerberg was super keen on this. And we know this because there was the whole legal stuff surrounding this, and his emails from the time were a part of this. And we know that Mark was keen. He was very excited. He was basically like, yeah, I'll whip that out in 10 hours. No big deal. I'll make it. We'll be partners. We'll all get rich. 10 hours kind of dragged on. Basically, a month goes by. Zuckerberg hasn't delivered anything. And unknown to his business partners, he was kind of not really working on it at all. Indeed, had started working on his own project, developing his own thing. And as you probably know, you're probably a little bit familiar with this story. It was rather similar to Harvard Connection. It just didn't have all the extra stuff. And he was also using kind of some psychological insights that he'd gained from FaceMash. And this all leads to very, very shortly afterwards, Zuckerberg registers thefacebook.com on January the 11th, 2004. Now, websites, even though they're just online, they are not free to run. And Zuckerberg needs some money to get started. So he approaches his friend, Eduardo Saverin, and he says, "Hey, Eduardo, will you give me $1,000? We can start this thing together. And you'll also get laid." This was genuinely Zuckerberg's sales pitch at the time. He was like, "Eduardo, if we start this thing, we'll be really cool and we'll definitely get laid." Again, this bit really nicely portrayed in The Social Network, that movie. I feel like I'm more selling The Social Network in this podcast than I am actually telling the story, but it's real good. At this point, Divya Narendra, the guy who had got Mark to on board to do Harvard Connection, he is kind of like, "Mark, please come back. We need you. We've started this thing. I don't want to go find another tech guy." But yeah, Mark, he was fully out. You know, he'd been secretive up until this point, and he was like, "Nope, I'm gone. This is it. I'm done." Less than a month later, Facebook launches, and it's just Harvard. So it really is like Harvard Connection, Mark Zuckerberg launching Facebook at just Harvard. It's easy to see why there was all the contention about this. Anyway, now this, when Facebook launched at Harvard, it was enormously popular, and it was kind of pretty easy to see from the get-go that this was something that was not just going to work at Harvard, but this was something that is going to work everywhere. And they did that fast. Within the first 2 weeks, 4,000 people had signed up to the service. Within the first 4 months, 200,000 people. And this is insanely impressive growth today, where we are way heavily on the internet. We've all got mobile phones on the internet. It's just stuff like this is happening more often. And this is super impressive growth today. Back in 2004, just mind-blowing. Anyway, summer comes, and it's less than 6 months after it's launched. And Zuckerberg is like, "We're moving to California. Silicon Valley is where we need to be. We need that money. We need those people around us. We need to be a part of that scene." Saverin, at this point, the guy who kicked in $1,000, he puts in another $20,000. This guy's got $20,000 knocking around as a student. Cool. All right. Anyway, he doesn't want to move to California with him, though. And this was something that did not go well for him. Zuckerberg needed that $20,000, but more, he needed Saverin to go with him to California. And Zuckerberg goes out there, and it's kind of it's his dream of a company. He's just got a bunch of programmer dudes in a house. They kind of hang out in the day, and then they program all night. It's pretty intense, and this is all going great. But they need the next step. They need this next big jump, and this is where Sean Parker, Justin Timberlake's character in The Social Network, amazing. He enters the picture, and Sean Parker, if you didn't know, maybe you don't even know, Napster was this thing in the 90s. You could download music. I realize I'm always like, "Yeah, Napster, of course everyone knows Napster." And then it's like, "Yeah, people my age, maybe a little older, and maybe a little younger." But I realize not everyone, if you may be 20 or whatever listening to this, you don't know what Napster is. It was kind of like early internet piracy, so you could like download songs for free. Sean Parker, I think he got in a bunch of trouble for this and stuff. Anyway, he had started this. He was living a few blocks away from the Facebook house where they were doing all the programming. Zuckerberg and Sean Parker had actually met before at a dinner. They were introduced by Saverin, which is kind of unfortunate when you consider what happened to Saverin. Although he ended up with you'll find out about this later if you don't know already. I'm not going to spoil. We'll get to that part in the story. Anyway, they know each other, Parker and Zuckerberg, and they meet on the streets of their neighborhood. And we can say that if you wanted to put a pin on when Facebook essentially went from a bunch of people making a website to Mark Zuckerberg essentially being the youngest billionaire in history, it was this meeting that really made it possible. Parker, through Napster and all of his various things, he was part of Silicon Valley's elite, and he could connect Mark with all the people who mattered. He could connect Mark with all the people who had money to invest in Silicon Valley. And this would be the thing that would really blow them up. Peter Thiel, he was rich from PayPal, I think. Yeah, he was co-founder of PayPal with Elon Musk and some other guys. I read Elon Musk's biography. It wasn't quite as simple as that. I think he was PayPal, Musk was X.com, and then they merged or something like that. But they were in PayPal together, part of this like PayPal mafia, which is a whole other interesting thing. We should do a biographics about the PayPal mafia, like multiple people in one episode, but that's super interesting. Anyway, point of this story is Peter Thiel puts in $500,000 and suddenly Facebook isn't a website. This is a real serious, serious business. Now, Saverin, who's put in $21,000, he's kind of being kicked out at this point. Like, he hasn't come to California, and that upsets Mark. Also, Saverin gets upset that Mark didn't match the $20,000 that he had put in. And so Saverin, back at Harvard, he was like, I run the business account. I'm just going to freeze this. And yeah, it's my money. You didn't put it in. That sucks. So Mark is at this point, well, he got more money. It doesn't matter. I'm just going to set up a new business and have new bank accounts and all of this stuff. And I'm just going to cut you out. So he starts a new business in Delaware. And he transfers all of the assets from the old company to the new company and basically screws Saverin out of his share. Indeed, Saverin has described it as, I was screwed out of my share. December rolls around that year. It's a year after launch. And at this point, Facebook's already got 1 million users. Also, some other major changes were taking place at Facebook at this time. Sean Parker was named as the president of the company, and he also forced through a name change, and he just said, it's not the Facebook, it's just Facebook. 5 months after that, things got even more serious. Way, way, way more serious. You remember how Peter Thiel put in that $500,000? Now they take some venture money from a company called Atsel, or Asel Partners, I'm not sure on the pronunciation of that, and they get $12.7 million. Now, by this point, Facebook, it's not just at Harvard anymore, but it's not everywhere. They're in other Ivy League schools, so like the big prestigious universities in the United States. And basically the Asel money, the $12.7 million, it came with the condition that basically they're going to expand. It's not just going to be Ivy League, it's going to be lots of other universities. And then onwards and upwards from there, end of that year rolls around 5.5 million users. Things are going great, Zuckerberg. He's fielding offers from all over the place. People wanting to buy like a little slice of his company for a whole lot of money. Also, another major change, less for the positive this time. This is where the character of Sean Parker, Justin Timberlake, exits the picture. He was apparently, allegedly busted with cocaine at a party. And so he is quietly removed from his presidency of the company. Anyway, another major expansion happened the next year, 2006. September of that year, it moved beyond universities and it moved to anyone who had an email address before. Like, I remember back in the day, you had to, in the UK, I think it's, I don't know what it is in the US, but in the UK, if you're at a university, you have something called like a .ac.uk or .uk.ac. I don't remember what it was, but you had like a university email address like that. And if you had that, it's the same one you can use today. Like if you want to get Creative Cloud or whatever, and you've got a user, a student email address, then you can get the like student discount. It used to get you into Facebook. But that was basically the end of that. Anyone could sign up, and it's explosive, totally explosive for growth. But at the same time, a lot of things they were starting to catch up with Zuckerberg. This is where, you remember the guy who wanted to start Harvard Connection with him, Narendra? He enters back into the picture because he hadn't gone away quietly. He wasn't like, I guess this is what it is. He instead launched a massive lawsuit. And this, at this point in 2006, just as this expansion's happening, this lawsuit's kind of coming to a head. And basically, Zuckerberg is just spending way more time than he wants to in legal depositions. And this has got to suck, right? Like, yeah, I don't want to feel sorry for him because he kind of did steal that dude's idea and he ends up paying a lot of money to this dude. But spending all that time in the courtroom where your company's like blowing up and you got to be making stuff, you can see why he got a little bit annoyed with this. Anyway, the press were also into this. They were like finding out about this kind of maybe intellectual property theft and stuff like that. And there was also, they were also finding out about the hacking, the fact that he had, back in the day, this kind of just came out around this time, that basically at Harvard, Facebook was up and running, and he used the people's personal information and private data to hack into their separate email accounts. So he hacked into, Harvard has a student newspaper called The Crimson, and journalists had been a little harsh on him, a little harsh on, like, for the face mash thing, and basically he broke into their email accounts. Anyway, it was causing some damage to his reputation, just a little bit. And yeah, now the thing about Mark Zuckerberg is he is a fighter, like, and he kind of just goes against this. And one thing that's kind of on his side that wouldn't be today is, this was well before data privacy was a big thing in the media and all of this stuff, especially around Facebook. I think that made it a little easier. Like, hacking into an email account today seems like very hardcore and serious. Back in the day, I think people were a little softer on it and softer on him about it. Also, he eventually settled that lawsuit with Narendra, $65 million, and that went away, and he no longer had to spend time in depositions. Good for him. $65 million, though. Good Lord. Now, 2008, probably the year most famous for being the start of the global financial crisis, but Facebook, no worries for them. They just keep on growing straight through this. Mark Zuckerberg becomes a billionaire. He's 23 years old. This global recession just doesn't slow him down. If Facebook's free, it's got loads of money from investors already. They just keep on rolling. Now, like I said at the beginning of this episode, let's change tacks here a little bit, because we've heard a lot of negative stuff about Mark Zuckerberg, and you hear a lot of negative stuff about Mark Zuckerberg in the press, but this isn't, he's not Lex Luthor, he's not evil in or anything like that. And I'd like to talk a little bit about his philanthropy. Simon, you're paid by Facebook. You're going to believe how much I hear this on, whenever I say something good about anything that's remotely controversial or has a lot of money, the number of times I get called a shill. It'd be like, if I was actually a shill for all this stuff, I would be super rich. Anyway, his philanthropy, one of the biggest things he's done is in 2010, he signed what's called the Giving Pledge. You might have heard of this. It's something that was created by Bill Gates and Warren Buffett. Basically, people sign it. It's not already binding or anything, but it's just this thing that says, hey, publicly, I'm saying that I'm going to give away the vast majority of my fortune over my lifetime. It's all going to go to charity. And Mark Zuckerberg's actually been the person who's committed more than anyone else, and not just in terms of raw numbers. Obviously, he's incredibly rich, but he's also said he's going to give away 99% of his fortune eventually. So I think this probably shouldn't surprise you quite as much as it probably does. Now, we talked a lot about the bad things that he's done, but as I said at the beginning, he's an idealist, and kind of this sort of move, it really fits with him. He's not Lex Luthor. It's like, he's into making the world better. He just kind of goes about it in a weird way. Well, let's jump back. Let's go back in time. Let's go back to where we were with the story. Now, kind of a few years go by, and it's less intense than it was at the beginning, but things just kind of go great. He gets married to Priscilla Chan. Remember the girl that he got a date with after Face Mash? Facebook goes public. Indeed, he got married the day after Facebook went public. It sounds like a pretty good weekend for Mark Zuckerberg, and he also becomes a father. So that's good news. These years go on well. He then starts something called internet.org, which he later calls Free Basics. His idea with this was that he wants to give internet to everyone in the world. He was kind of like, internet's a human right. People should definitely have this. If they can't have it, I'm going to give it to them for free. He was going to work out a way to get it. To get it done. The problem was, he was saying, oh yeah, we're only going to support 36 sites though. I can't give all of the internet for free because it's just impossible. Yeah, cynics might say, yeah, Mark, but one of those 36 sites was definitely Facebook. And it is quite crazy when your business is so large that the cap on users and getting more users into it is not because they don't want to use it. It's because they don't have the internet. So you have to give people the internet to get them to use your product. Amazing. Anyway, a lot of people, there's this idea of net neutrality. Which is basically the idea that anyone who has access to the internet should have equal access to be able to access all parts of the internet, and that providers shouldn't bias towards certain parts. People thought, probably correctly, especially Indian journalists, where he was planning on making this Free Basics a big thing, they were like, this violates net neutrality. It basically means you get access to these 36 sites and other people don't have a chance to make sites that they would also get access to through this Free Basics thing. So it's not neutral. This, in response to this, rather than being like, yes, that sounds reasonable, let me think about how we can handle this, Zuckerberg's essentially like, no, screw net neutrality. What I'm going to do is we'll just get some petitions going. We'll start them on Facebook. Loads of people will sign them. I might even cheat a little and get some dead people to sign them. And people who didn't subscribe, didn't sign them, I'll just say they did. So this was kind of a little bit sketchy. It's this example of Mark Zuckerberg absolutely just fight back. They say they signed onto this petition. Doesn't look good for Zuckerberg. He doesn't learn his lesson, though. When this kind of goes badly wrong, he's just kind of like, oh, yeah, next time I just strike harder and faster. So, yeah. Probably better if he'd learned his lesson here and might have been causing a little less trouble later on. And then pretty shortly after this came along another scandal, and this is probably the one that's a bit more famous, fake news. Now, the editor of BuzzFeed, they noticed that there were a lot of stories on Facebook about the presidential candidate Donald Trump coming from Macedonia. It's kind of a weird place for an American political candidate to have news stories coming from. And basically, he looked at these and he was like, wow, these are really blowing up on Facebook. Like, a lot of people are coming to this. Anyway, more stories basically started coming from other places around the world, not just Macedonia, but also notably from Russia. They were all fake. The news was just completely made up, and a lot of it related to Trump and Clinton, and kind of it seemed that they were mostly pushing a pro-Trump agenda. So basically, shortly after Trump was elected, Zuckerberg, he kind of went out there and he made a speech saying that anyone who was worried about this fake news on Facebook being a thing, it's kind of crazy that you think that, it's not really a big deal. This was a bit of a mistake, a bit of a PR mistake by Mark there. Importantly, he wasn't really telling the whole truth. Indeed, later research showed that during the election, some 126 million people in the United States, they had seen news stories from Russian propaganda groups on Facebook. Now, Zuckerberg, he was still denying this, and then kind of the CIA chimed in and were like, oh no, yeah, the Russians in 2017, they interfered in the 2016 elections, and Facebook had a major role in it. This is the CIA, they're pretty serious. Facebook continued to deny this, but basically, internally at this point, the shit was hitting the fan. It wasn't going well. Facebook started a major crackdown on fake news. And eventually, hard evidence came out that, yeah, the CIA was right. Facebook had been involved, and Facebook had to stop denying it. And Zuckerberg changed his tune. He did something that he, you know, hadn't really done so far, and he made a public apology. But fake news might not have been the biggest scandal. Cambridge Analytica, certainly something you've heard of. Basically, they were a company that were using third-party apps to harvest data from Facebook users. They harvested the data of 80 million users, and they did use it to influence voting in the United States as well as UK and Mexico. So basically, how this would work is like people took some sort of test, you know, one of those fun little tests on Facebook, and it harvested your data. It didn't just harvest your data, it harvested the data of your friends that could get its hands on, and then it used this data to basically target people who were on the fence about who to vote for. So if you're like, Trump or Hillary, and then it would be like, hey, here's an advert about how Hillary is crooked, or Trump is amazing, or they tended to be a bit pro-Trump, so this sort of thing, and then hopefully nudge you over to the side that they wanted you to vote for. Now, this could have potentially blown over. It wouldn't have been perhaps such an enormous deal if Zuckerberg didn't know about it, but he did. And he was pretty okay with the selling of data. He was even okay with people's selling the data of people's private messages, which does seem just a touch intrusive, Mark. Like, I kind of expect those to be private. I didn't know about that when we were making this video. And I'm like, really? Like, those are my private messages. I don't like being, like, having that data sold to anyone, even if it is anonymous or whatever. Anyway, the problem was, you know, back in the day, Mark got away with a lot. You know, hacking the email accounts of those Crimson journalists and stuff like that. And it did seem in the past people didn't really mind so much about data privacy. You know, you didn't want your privacy invaded or anything, but it just wasn't quite taken as seriously as it is today. And yeah, now things, when this came out, things have changed. And Zuckerberg had to go in front of Congress and testify. You probably saw a video of that when it happened. It was interesting. It was a bit weird. And to this very day, this is probably not the last we've seen of Facebook scandals. More scandals seem to be unfolding all the time. There's claims that Facebook has aided in the harassment of mass shooting survivors, facilitated ethnic cleansing in Myanmar, the spread of negative propaganda about George Soros, all sorts of things. And Mark Zuckerberg tends to refuse to budge on these things. He's not stepping down from his role at Facebook. He's continuing the fight. And, you know, I don't think he has any bad intentions or anything. He's an idealist, and it's not like he wants to help in the harassment of mass shooting survivors. It's just, you know, some things get out of control sometimes. Oh, maybe I'm being a bit too defensive of him, but I don't think he's an idealist. He's not a bad guy. Anyway, this is the story of Zuckerberg and Facebook, from that Harvard dorm all those years ago to the absolute behemoth that exists today. And this is where we end the episode. It's surely not the story's end, though. Zuckerberg is still in his 30s. That's crazy. He's the world's richest, youngest, richest billionaire, billionaire. Now he's worth an absolute fortune. Huge company. Seriously impressive, dude. I imagine if this podcast, if this YouTube channel, the Biographics YouTube channel, which you should definitely go and subscribe to, by the way, we got more stuff like this. If it's still around in 10 years, I'd love to see what this update would look like. Anyway, that's it for now. As always, please do leave us a review on iTunes, say hi, drop me an email, simon@biographics.org, all of that good stuff. And I'll see you in the next episode. I won't see you. You'll hear me. That's what'll happen.